There's a line of thinking that goes, we only get in life what we can handle. But it turns out sometimes we actually get more than we can deal with. The conventional wisdom is often that when something bad happens to us, we're able to bounce back, move on, get back on that horse, whichever cliche you prefer. But research from ASU shows that might not actually be the case. Sunia Luther has been studying this for 3 decades. She's an ASU Foundation professor of psychology. And Sunia, is it a fair assessment to say people don't have as much resilience as we think we do?
Yes, that's a fair assessment. There have been reports in the last decade or so claiming that most people, anywhere between 2/3 to 75%, are resilient in the face of major life stresses. And the analyses that my colleague Frank Inferno and I have done have basically shown that that is an erroneous conclusion.
And when you talk about major life stresses, these are like deaths in the family, divorce, really like negative things that happen to an individual.
That is correct. Bereavement, divorce, unemployment, major life events, and deployment in war.
So how do you measure resilience? Because I think different people could look at it differently.
Therein lies the rub. The degree to which, or the number of people you can say are resilient, depends on how you measure it. So if I define resilience based on one attribute, that you're a happy person, that gives you a certain likelihood of, if I say, now you also have to be friendly with people, you also have to have a good job, you also have to be a good father, you also have, the more criteria you include, the lower the likelihood is that people are going to escape. So when you have a major adversity like a death or 9/11 or deployment, and you say, all I'm looking for is post-traumatic stress syndrome. If you don't have that, you're resilient. That's problematic, because if it's not coming out in PTSD, it could come out in anxiety, in too much drinking, in trouble in relationships, and so on. So that's the answer to your question. How many people, how do you decide who's resilient, depending on the criteria you use, the strictness of that, you will come up with different numbers.
So it seems like when you talk about, oh, so-and-so is so resilient, like this thing happened to them, and you know they're just sort of moving on with their life. Mm-hmm. It seems like for a lot of non-researchers, that is sort of the method by which we're judging people, right? Like, how similar is their life post-event to what it was pre-event, and are they doing sort of the same things that they used to do and seeming to enjoy them? Is that in any way, obviously a non-scientific way, but is that in any way a reasonable way to gauge whether or not somebody is resilient?
That's a very good way to gauge resilient adaptation. Now, you say that somebody is resilient. And what I'd like to point out is that my bouncing back and getting back to my earlier level may have nothing to do with my sturdiness of character or my stick-to-itiveness. May have to do with the loved ones around me, with my faith, may have any number of things. So one of the things in developmental science that we've said for decades, that we don't use resilient as an adjective for a person necessarily. We say that you are showing resilient adaptation, but that could be coming from any number of sources.
Because you have to adapt, right? If something bad happens, life can't be the way it was before.
It can't be. But what we, in developmental science, what we are reluctant to do is to put a label of resilient on you. You may be the reason that you're doing so well, but it could be any number of other things. So what we're much more concerned about is understanding what is it that helps people get to that positive trajectory. Understand that. And those may be attributes of the person or the community around them.
Yeah, what are some of those things? Because you hear about things like support groups, or some people want to be left alone. Some people want to be with people after something bad happens. Is it just personal to what works for each individual, or there's some sort of universal things that people can do?
I have been studying this topic for over 30 years, and there's one sentence I can capture this with. Resilience rests fundamentally on relationships, right? Supportive relationships. So if you tell me I'm a person with a lot of stick-to-itiveness and control over my life, that's all fine and dandy, but as long as your life is difficult and you have nobody around you, after a while, your stick-to-itiveness falls through. So the point is, even when you have personal attributes, you need people around you, the support systems that keep those attributes healthy and flourishing.
Have you found in your years of research that the relationships that matter most are pre-existing relationships with friends and family beforehand, as opposed to maybe support groups or people who have gone through something similar but maybe you didn't know before?
What an excellent question. I think either one could work. In most cases, it's wonderful if you're going through something really traumatic and you can reach out to support systems and networks that are already in place. On the other hand, as you said, if you have a bereavement group or something, you're sharing a common trauma, and that common ground can bring you much closer together. The deal is really authenticity in communications. As long as you can be real and share what you're really feeling, whether it's people who've been in your life in the past or current or new people, that's what really matters.
Sunia Luther is an ASU Foundation Professor of Psychology. We are talking about the research that she and a colleague have been doing about resilience. Sunia, thank you.
My pleasure.